Oh my gosh, I need like a time machine to fast forward to May 7th and have this book in my
I
hands.
feel like I'm in a time machine right now. I wish
Okay.
it would slow down a little bit.
I'll switch places with you. Yeah.
That would be great.
And hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Try Reading Podcast, starring me, your favorite. Everybody knows me. Nobody cares about me anymore. Everyone's just like, okay, enough. On to the guest, and I don't blame you. And speaking of guests, today I am so honored and lucky to be joined by the amazing debut author, Laura R. Samotin. How are you doing, Laura? And how's the book world treating you?
So I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. And the book world is treating me pretty amazingly, except for revising, which is always a beast. So if someone could rescue me from that and come revise my book for me, that would be much appreciated.
I have heard many different stories and horror stories of revision and people being stuck in the depths of it. So my thoughts and prayers are with you.
Thank you. I got over the hurdle of actually drafting a sequel to
Oh
The Sins on Their
gosh.
Bones, which is the book we're talking about today. But then I was like, oh wait, I wrote like the sophomore book. I did it. It's a whole book-shaped thing. But now I actually have to edit it and make it good.
Right.
So it's always a shock, even though it happens every time you write something.
Yeah, no, it's true. You had sort of like that double hurdle because I know a lot of people talk about like the sophomore slump, but you also have like the sequel aspect of it. Like it's not just a whole new story, you have to continue what has already begun. So,
Exactly. And
wow.
sequels are hard. Like, as a
I can
reader, I
imagine.
am really picky about a sequel because if
Yeah.
I'm picking up a second book, it's because I loved the first one. And so I feel like there's extra pressure. Like, first off, I'm hoping that anyone in the world, like at least one person, wants to read the sequel. Obviously, we don't know since no one has read the first book yet. But like, I'm hoping that there are at least a couple people who want to pick up the sequel. And so I feel a lot of pressure to like fulfill their expectations because, if someone likes your book enough to buy the next one, you want to make sure that they have like a great reading experience.
Right. Yeah. Well, I know I'm going to be so excited to read both book one and two. And yeah, I May 7th can't come soon enough.
Yeah, I mean, first it was years away.
Right. And
Now
now
it's like
it's.
months, and I'm watching my timer tick down on my iPhone and get like closer and closer and closer. And now I'm like, whoa. First, this was happening years from now, and now it's like tomorrow. So
Yeah. I can
it's
only
weird how time
imagine.
works when you're debuting.
Right. Well, I am, like I said, just so excited to be talking with you. And for the listeners who don't know Laura, now's the time to learn about her. Laura has a PhD in international relations and enjoys using her academic background on military tactics, power politics, and leadership to enliven and inform her creative writing. Her young adult and adult fiction is grounded in Jewish myth, mysticism, and her Eastern European Jewish heritage. She served as a 2021 hashtag DV Mentor Mentor and a 2021 to 2022 Write Mentor Summer Program Mentor, and also runs the website Query 101 to help authors on their writing journey. She lives with her spouse, and when she's not researching or writing, she relishes her role as a full-time cat servant. Her debut novel, The Sins on Their Bones, is releasing on May 7th, 2024, like I said, through Random House Canada, and I couldn't be more excited. I am so thrilled to be talking with you today, and I cannot wait to learn more about you and your debut. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's always super exciting to talk about this like thing that's been in my head. Just like it's a very solitary thing to write a book and then even just publishing it. So it's super exciting that now it's getting to be more out in the world and I can actually talk about it with people. It's nerve-wracking, but it's also super exciting.
I'm sure you're getting like all the waves of emotions.
Yes. Terror,
Right.
fear. Trepidation. Being a writer is bad because you can come up with a lot of synonyms for the existential, dread of being perceived that you're feeling at any given moment.
This is a great advertisement for anyone who's interested in wanting to be an author.
Oh, being an author is great. Like I promise. I promise. There's so many wonderful things about it. Yeah, there are a lot of great things.
Yeah. Well, I always start the podcast by asking, what are you currently reading?
What am I currently reading? So I am reading a book called Don't Let the Forest In by C.G. Drews. It is kind of like a dark academia YA horror. It's an ARC, so it's not widely available yet, but you are all going to really want to get your hands on this. And I will say I am not reading this book yet because it's stuck in customs, but as soon as it shows up at my doorstep, I'm going to be diving into Voyage of the Damned by Francis White, because I have been waiting for this book for so long. The pitch was incredible. It was like a murder mystery river cruise YA. And so as soon as that arrives on my doorstep, I'm dropping everything to read it. So two phenomenal books right now. I'm embarrassed to admit how long my to be read list is. It's like sometimes I stop counting when I get over 55 books. Like I don't know why that number is the number for me, like the shame number. But you know, so it's like somewhere over 55 books. Yeah, I had to build a whole shame shelf, which you can see behind me actually, to hold more of my to be read books that I haven't gotten to yet. So the curse, which isn't a curse of being an author, is that you have almost unlimited access to amazing books through your friends, through ARCs, through your publisher. And so you know, it's like the best possible thing to always be drowning in wonderful books, but it also, you know, it means that you're always struggling to find time to get through all of them because I want to read everything. But alas, I actually have to do other stuff too.
No, I wish I could read all day and complete my TBR. And honestly, there was an author who was on the podcast in season one, and she said, like, I feel like I'm gonna die and they're gonna have to bury the rest of my TBR with me because it's not gonna be done by the time my time is over. Like, it's never ending.
I had a book buying ban for a while when my TBR got into the 90s, and I was so good. I got down to 17 books, but then I started to panic in a different direction, which was, what happens when my TBR is zero? Like, I'm not just going to have an entire library of things to like pluck out and read. And so then, like, I got like reverse panic. I was like, I need more books. Like, I'm running out of books. And so, you know, now I'm back at 55 plus.
Well, I'm currently on a book buying ban, and yeah, I'm sort of like allowing myself.
How's that working for you?
I feel good, like sometimes, like when you go into a bookstore and then you leave and you're like, oh my gosh, wait, no, I stuck to like my promise and my goal, and I looked around but I didn't have to take anything with it. It was stressful, it was painful, it was like a battle, but it is that sort of thing of like, okay, I'm gonna leave like maybe like five and then I'll go get more. Like, I don't want to like finish every single book because then then I'll have nothing, like you said, and then I what does that mean? I just have to like read the next book that's available and there's no other options. Like, as
You
a
like
mood
don't,
reader, that's terrible.
yeah, you don't have an infinite library of books that you know that you want to read. And like, you're right, like, I keep a bunch of every different genre on my TBR at one time because you're like, I'll put down one book and be like, oh, you know what? I'm really feeling like a rom-com, or I'm really feeling a super huge epic fantasy, or, you know, I really want. I don't know. Like, I rarely read contemporary, but sometimes I'm like, I'm just really in the mood for something like short contemporary litfic. And so I like to have at least one of those options with me at any given time. Like, preferably like with me. Like, if I go on vacation, like I like to bring them just in case.
Well, I had been in a reading slump up until like December, and then I read So Let Them Burn by Camila Coelho. I read an ARC, and obviously it was amazing, obviously. And now Camila is an indie bestseller, which is amazing. And
Camila is, we have to shout out So Let Them Burn. It is a YA Jamaican inspired fantasy. It has sapphics, it has sisters, it has dragons, it has bookish boys, it has some of my favorite characters of all times. It has a town named Dead Egg because it has a dead egg. And it's just like, I read the book Kind of like before I became really good friends with Camila. So it's not even by like I'm not even biased by friendship when I say that this book grabbed me in its dragon claws and like flew me away. It was incredible. And if you have not read it yet and you're listening to this podcast, stop what you're doing. I'm not that interesting. Go out and buy it. Read it right now because you definitely need it in your life. The sequel's
Absolutely.
coming out, and Camila also has an adult book that is coming out as well. It's going to be Dark Academia, so you should put that on your TBR too.
For sure. It is, yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm so happy that now everyone can read it. And I think I have spent like a good portion of every episode since talking with Camila mentioning the book in some capacity, any way I can. And I will keep
Yeah,
that going for the rest of time.
yeah, no, we have to keep it going because I'm
Right.
also the self-named head of the Maeve Warwick fan club.
Perfect.
It's like my like solemn sworn duty to promote this book wherever and whenever I can. And
Right.
if you want to read a book by a person who's just an amazing human being, you need to let
Exactly.
them burn.
Yeah. Honestly, we could just, turn this
This could
episode
just be a So Let
into
Them Burn fan podcast.
talking
Yeah, like we don't like who needs to talk about the sins on their bones? Like we really should just be just doing a deep dive into why we love So Let Them Burn so
Exactly.
much.
Try reading who? What? No, this is
No, try reading So Let Them Burn. It's the
right?
name of your podcast.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, yeah, so I mean that's really been on my mind since, but that and then the joys of being a senior in high school are really, really fun. So that's been, fighting against my time to read. But currently I'm listening to the book Remarkably Bright Creatures by Shelby Van Pelt. And I was gifted it by a friend who loves the book, and it's very interesting. It's not the typical book that I would pick up. Like, I like fiction and I like contemporary fiction, but it you're I don't know how many, there's a bunch of different point of views, and there's not like a pattern to it. You get different point of views from characters within the story. You also get the point of view from an octopus within the story, and they all the point of views sort of connect. So it's not even I mean, it is fiction, but it's almost like there's like this magical realism to it in a way, because the octopus is like very much like a person with thoughts in a way, and or speculative fiction. But it's really fun and it's really interesting, and I'm just sort of excited to see how all of these perspectives and point of views connect, because as the story progresses, you can sort of see the things that these characters do or certain things that they realize connect to other characters, and it's sort of like this kind of really cool puzzle. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it, and yeah, it's very intriguing and interesting.
Yeah, I'll have to add that to my list. So,
Yeah.
but see, it's still 55 plus.
Right,
It's great.
exactly.
Like, I didn't really just add a book to my TBR. It's
I know. Well, the two you gave me, Voyage of the Damned, that's been on my list of like, I really want to read that. And then the arc you have sounds really good, and I have not heard of it, so yet another added.
definitely do it.
Yeah. Well, I have one honorable mention, or a previous podcast guest has a book release, and that is on February 13th, Fatal First Edition by Jen McKinley releases. It is the 14th book in her fantastic Library Lovers mystery series, and it is just a really fun mystery series. If you love cozy mystery, if you love books and books about books, if you like the main characters are librarians, and it's just a super fun series, so I highly recommend it. But without further ado, I have my very first question for you, Laura, and that is, what was your start to the world of books and reading?
So I have always loved reading. I believe that my earliest kind of exposure to reading, like once I was able to read on my own, I became fixated on like encyclopedia books about dinosaurs. I was very into dinosaurs as a small child, and so I would force my parents over and over to read the same like encyclopedia entries about dinosaurs to me, and then I apparently would get really, really mad at them when they supposedly pronounced the dinosaur names wrong. So that was I don't remember that. Sorry, mom and dad. But I remember like the first like real fantasy series that I picked up that I recall as being Redwall by Brian Jacques. I picked it up in third grade because my teacher noticed I loved animals and also loved reading, and I was blowing through all the early reader books that we had in the classroom. And so I was reading this series, and it's like mice that can talk who are in an abbey because they're monks, like fighting against the evil rats with the help of like the badgers and everything. It's a super cute kid series, from back in the 90s. And that was kind of the first thing that I remember really reading and loving and just really diving into the world. And that was, I think, my first exposure to something where it was really, really full of this intricate world building. Like, there was the mice had this whole like religion and all these customs, and the world was huge. They were journeying to different parts of it. And something in my little third grade brain kind of sparked and was like, huh, this is super cool. So I actually started writing that same year, and I wrote what are probably my two best works. Although now that I just pitched you Redwall, they're going to seem a little derivative. They're also a little bit disturbing. So my first book, from Laura, author age 8, was The Rat and the Mouse. You can see the Redwall inspiration just in the title, but it
Right.
was a story about a mouse named Matamito, and he was leading the mouse army, and he was fighting against the rat army led by the rat commander named Grey Lunk. Like, I really, my ability to name characters nosedived after age 8. I never got better than this. And so Matamito and Grey Lunk lead their armies to a forest for a climactic confrontation on page 4. And Matamito stabs Grey Lunk, and he's like laying on the forest dying, and he goes, "Matamito, we were brothers this whole time." And then the other 10 pages are like Matamito's like gut-wrenching journey of like realizing that his greatest enemy was his brother all along, and he had just killed him before they could explore their relationship. So that was The Rat and the Mouse. And then there was a sequel, The Warrior, which was like really dark, was about Matamito's like journey after the war, where he had to reckon with the fact that he destroyed his entire family. And it got really deep. It was like a was a really heavy like 25 page book. So that was my start to both reading and writing.
I absolutely love that. And hey, I would be more than glad to read that 14-page first novel and the 25-page second novel.
Well,
Those,
Gabriel, believe
I
it or
mean,
not, I actually have them with me. So if you
oh my
want
gosh.
a super exclusive
I would
for the
be
Chartering
honored.
podcast, I will. One second. For people who are listening and can't see what I'm holding up, they're like really, really yellowed books. When I say book, I mean a piece of cardboard folded in half and stapled with like printed out lines of paper in the
Oh
middle.
my gosh.
So I'll do a dramatic reading of chapter one if that's okay with you.
Absolutely, please. I would be more than honored.
Yeah, okay, chapter one's not that long. Chapter one. Oh, I even actually, sorry, I dedicated this to Brian Jacques because his writing inspired this book. So I admitted my derivative nature like right on the inside
Absolutely.
cover.
Right. Honesty, it's all there. Yeah.
Chapter one. Grey Lunk was in a bad mood. His band of rats knew better than to disturb their chief when he was in a foul mood. Grey Lunk had a mighty army, fearing yet following him. "Clooney," Grey Lunk snapped. "Yes, chief. Go get some good firewood." I guess as opposed to bad firewood, I don't know what the difference is. I've never gotten firewood in my life. "We'll camp here for the night. Meanwhile, at the top of the Salamandastron," I don't know what that is, "the evil mouse army stood waiting." "So they have decided to camp in Mossflower for the night," said Matamito, the most feared warrior in the band. He had the teeth, bones, and claws of his enemies strung around his neck. His blood-red eyes stared into the forest, looking for his enemy that he would destroy at all costs, even if it meant certain death. Yeah, so I was 8 when I wrote that. I don't know why my parents weren't more concerned, but yeah, for if you want more, I guess you're just gonna have to petition my publisher to publish a special edition of
Absolutely. That will
The
be
Rat and the
my,
Mouse.
yeah, no, that will be my task this afternoon. I'm gonna, after we
Start a petition,
finish.
Gabriel.
Yeah, absolutely. That was absolutely amazing. I absolutely want to read more. And oh my gosh. Well, clearly as you just shared, both reading the book and telling us, that love for fantasy was there since, reading Redwall. And I mean, oh my gosh, you wasted no time writing that story, just getting right into this, like,
Yeah,
no
I just
setting things
dropped
up. It was
right.
like,
Nope,
forget
it
the
was like the
exposition.
conflict is
Right.
there. Like Raylan is getting the firewood. He is
Right.
camping in this forest. He is feared and followed. And like his enemy is just right there watching on, dressed in rat bones.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
Like I just really went in.
I mean, it's so amazing though that now here you are publishing your debut fantasy. And it is, I mean, I'm sure younger you would just be like so amazed and also just like so proud, I feel like, but also like probably like, yeah, this totally checks out and makes sense.
I think my 8-year-old self would think that my 31-year-old self was deeply uncool. But I hope my 8-year-old self would be proud. I kind of had this, age 8 like highlight of my career writing these books. And all throughout school, I was writing little things here and there, but I wasn't the kind of kid who was like completing stories left and right. I have notebooks full of like the first 3 pages of like 7,000 books. And so when I went off to college, I stopped writing entirely, and it was just something I didn't have time for. I never really thought there was a path forward. And then the pandemic hit, and kind of the one good thing that came out of it was I remember like basically like getting lunch with a friend outdoors where we sat 6 feet apart, and it was like the very beginning. We said, like, I don't know if like we're actually gonna be able to meet up again, like ever. Like maybe we're all gonna be stuck in our houses for the rest of our lives.
Right.
So like, what are we gonna do? She said, like I think I'm gonna write a book. Like, why not? I don't have a lot to do. I'm not going out. I'm not doing anything else. And I said, okay, I'm gonna write a book with you. And so that was the end of March of 2020, and by the end of April of 2020, again, because I had so much free time, I had written the first draft of a YA fantasy that was super, super derivative, like hidden princess stuff. And I was really proud of it because it was the first novel length thing that I actually finished. But then I had to figure out kind of how to go about getting readers and getting it published. So that was a really fun journey, and through a lot of other ups and downs and twists and turns, we have gotten here today with my adult fantasy debuting from Penguin Random House. It is published by Random House Canada, which is an imprint, but it is going to be available globally. You can walk into your American Barnes and Noble and fingers crossed pick it up if the local booksellers liked it. So everyone will be able to read it soon, and it's kind of the culmination of 23 years of loving writing and reading and figuring out how to actually like tell a story that's a little bit better than the rat and the mouse.
Well, maybe we'll get a Rat and the Mouse cameo in book two. Here's to hoping. Maybe there'll be like
That's
some
a good.
mouse that runs across the page or something.
You know what? You got it. Like, I love doing those little hidden Easter eggs for people. One of the very minor, like I wouldn't call it a character, but like a feature of the environment in the first book is a tiny demon who is actually modeled after one of my very good friend's cat. And so I love including those little hidden like nods to like friends or things I love or like jokes that I tell with my family or any number of things where the reader's not going to pick it up, but I know I've snuck it in there.
Right. Yeah, like cameos that like if you know, you know. Yeah.
If you know, you know.
Well, I love that there was that strong love for fantasy and yeah, and that, like you said, it wasn't writing wasn't necessarily a path as you got to college that you thought you would go on. And then there was this sort of turn of events and when obviously, so it sounds like, you had your YA fantasy that you were drafting in the pandemic. And whether it was before the pandemic when you were younger and you had dreams of writing like when you were 8 or 9, or when it was within the pandemic and you were drafting, did you know that if you were going to publish a book, it would be fantasy that you published?
Definitely. Fantasy is my first great love. I read almost, I would say, if I'm thinking about like all the books that I read, what percentage are fantasy? I think it would be about 70%. I love the genre. I love the speculative elements and the creativity. And it was what I grew up reading. It's what I still love to read too. So when I started writing, I knew that I always wanted to like write and debut with fantasy. I have a couple of other projects by myself and with a co-author that I write with that branch out of the fantasy genre, although I think they still have like maybe some little speculative elements. So I'm excited to start branching out as an author. But yeah, fantasy is my one true love, and I'm always going to come back to it.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I've seen, and speaking of co-author, I've seen, a little while back you had teased the sort of like Romeo and Juliet inspired vampire novel that you were writing with Ben Alderson, and that sounds so amazing. And yeah, so I just love that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
we I'll make a pitch to any editors who are listening.
Yeah.
Buy our book. It's going to go out on submission to editors, I think, in like very early February.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Ben is like one of my best friends. He's an incredible author in his own right. He like taught me. It was like one of those funny author stories where like I was a huge fan of his like before I started writing, and then I started like talking to authors, and I started talking to him, and I was like, I'm sliding into your DMs to tell you I'm a huge fan. And then now we're writing books together. So it just goes to show that the writing community and the author community are full of amazing people. But oh, I should shout out his book, which is coming out
Oh, yeah.
tomorrow, actually,
Oh,
Prince of
really?
Endless Tides. It is a Little Mermaid retelling. It is incredible. Everyone should pick it up. It is funny, it is snarky, it's gonna have you on the edge of your seat. It is very spicy. I think it's his best one yet. So everyone should grab a copy because by the time this comes out, it will be released. So go buy Prince of Endless Tides. And then hopefully, if you're an editor, you're listening and you will want to buy our co-written book From the Shadows, which is a gay Romeo and Juliet retelling featuring vampires from warring families set in modern day Oxford. So we have a vampire who's immortal and is a professor at Oxford, and then we have a doe-eyed innocent librarian who maybe isn't entirely what he seems. And if you know the Romeo and Juliet story, you know exactly what's going to happen, and we are super excited for it. So editors, please buy our book.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And honestly, it would be, I mean, they'd be smart too, because vampires are like the thing right now. Like, there are so many vampire books that I've noticed coming out this
Which
year and next year. And it's like everybody
is
wants to
so
read that.
wild because for a while everyone was like, no more vampires. I feel
Right.
like the Twilight
Right.
boom.
Yeah.
By the way, my one literary claim to fame is that I have an arc of Twilight,
Oh my gosh.
an original arc of the first
Whoa.
Twilight. Yeah, it's crazy. I didn't realize what it was until I became an author, and then I went into my parents' basement and I was looking through the stacks of all their books that, from our childhood, and I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
It was like advanced reader copy of
Oh my
Twilight.
gosh.
But yeah, I think that it's like it's interesting how trends come and go in literature, just like anything else. And I think it goes to show that there are things that people will always love. And sometimes you just need to wait. For example, if you're like a writer and you really love writing about vampires, sometimes you just need to give the market a little bit of time because all those people who grew up reading Twilight, like now we're like looking for more books. We were adults. We still love reading about vampires. And now we want adult books that feature vampires. Kids who, are reading YA today, like Twilight's a bit dated now. And so they want fresh stories, and so nothing is really ever dead, I think, in the book world. It's just maybe not its moment right then. So
Absolutely.
never give up hope that your favorite trope or trend is dead forever.
Right.
Like it's not dead forever. Like
Right.
hold on to that.
Totally. Yeah. No, seeing this, like the surge in vampire novels, whether being released or being written, is so exciting. And like, also, I have one idea that I've been working on my own and one that I've been working on with a
Ooh.
friend, vampire related. And I was like, oh, this is exciting. 'Cause like, obviously, like you said, they never really die. They just like surge back up at times. But seeing the major excitement for it within 2024, has been super exciting. And yeah, and dragons were a huge thing 2023 and have stayed really big. And
Yeah.
so let them
So
burn, obviously. Yeah.
Love and Burn has dragons.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for all of us, Christopher Paolini kids,
Right.
like now it's like we have a wealth of dragon books.
Exactly.
But So Let Them Burn
Right.
is the best dragon book of all time.
Absolutely.
You
Yeah.
actually don't need to read any other dragon books. You can
No,
just get
there's,
seven copies of that
yeah, what
one.
dragon book? Yeah. No, it's only So Let Them Burn. So, yeah, well, now, like I said, here you are with your debut novel publishing on May 7th. And could you share with the listeners what the book is about, whether you want to give like your elevator pitch
Oh,
or
great.
any which way you
Because
want to
you've been
share
listening to this podcast and you actually still have
it?
no idea who I am or what this book is about. We've been talking about. I made a great pitch for The Rat and the Mouse, but that's not actually what
Hey,
you
it's
about.
yours though.
So The Sins on Their Bones is an adult fantasy. It is the story of two ex-husbands fighting on opposite sides of a civil war over the same throne, with a dashing, handsome, and very talented spy master caught in the crossfire. So it comes out on May 7th, 2024, and it is steeped in Jewish myth and mysticism. I am an Ashkenazi Jew, and so I wanted to infuse a world with my culture and my religion, because it's not something I saw very often.
Yeah. Well, I am so excited for this story. And I mean, from the description to the cover, everything just, oh my gosh, I need like a time machine to fast forward to May 7th and have this book in my
I
hands.
feel like I'm in a time machine right now. I wish
Right.
it would slow down a little bit.
I'll switch places with you. Yeah.
That would be great.
And well, what was the inspiration for The Sins on Their Bones?
So people ask me this a lot, and I have a hard time answering this question because the way that my writing process works is I feel like I'm always picking up little scraps of ideas. I'm a very mentally visual person, so I have a when I write, and when I kind of think about books, I feel like I'm almost watching a movie like in my mind's eye and writing down what I see. And so sometimes I'll get these little flashes where I'm like, okay, that's like an interesting hint of a character that's come to me, or wow, that would be a really interesting setting, or wouldn't it be cool if there was a plot twist here? And I feel like a lot of my creative process is gathering enough scraps and sticking them together to make a story. And so that's kind of what happened with this. I was like, in just like thinking back to what I was consuming during that time period, I am a huge Leigh Bardugo fan. She also has a Jewish, like, not that I need to hype Leigh Bardugo, but The Familiar is her first explicitly Jewish book, which is coming out basically a month to the day before TSTB. So if you read that one and you like it, maybe you'll like mine too. But I was watching Shadow and Bone, which, I'm a huge Shadow and Bone and Six of Crows fan. And so I was watching that and I was like, this is pretty cool. I like the Darkling, I like Kaz. What if they kissed and then they became enemies? That was literally my thought process. It was, sometimes ideas hit you out of nowhere. So I started building this world, and I was trying to fill out the story, and I was thinking it would be interesting to kind of combine it with some of the historical settings that I study in my day job as a researcher. I have a PhD in international relations, and so I've done a lot of work on Prussia and 1800s Russia and Europe. And so it kind of all started to gel together with battles I had read about and my family's history and some of these inspirations that I was taking, and frankly, just tropes that I loved, because I'm a sucker for found family. I am a, like I'm a huge enemies to lovers fan, but I'm a really huge lovers to enemies fan. You don't get that so much.
Right.
I'm a huge friends to lovers fan. So I was like, wow, if I were to make a book, I could bake all of this in. So that's kind of how it started coming together. And then I wrote a very different book to start out with. So if that first draft met the published book, they would have no idea what they were looking at.
Yeah, which is very interesting to hear, and also just shows how ideas and thoughts and processes can change a lot. And but I love how there were all these little bits and pieces of information that were not in any order, but just, ideas, and they sort of then started to form, and very structured idea, and now
It's a
it's
book.
the
Yeah.
book, and yeah.
I think that the process of writing is really interesting. And I like to think of it as you're kind of like you're like a sculptor who's like got a block of marble and you're like chipping away at it. And first it's definitely a rock, and then like maybe it starts to have some sort of shape, and then you like figure out exactly what you want to do, and then you definitely know what you're looking at, but it's not refined, and then you go in and refine it and you're polishing it up. The original version of this book, so the published version of TSTB has three point of view characters. So we have Dmitri, who is the dispossessed Tsar of Novosvitsevo. He was overthrown by his now ex-husband, and he is in exile, with the second point of view character, Vasily, who is the spy master of Dmitri's court, and is very secretly, very desperately in love with him, but they're idiots in love, so of course there's a lot of mutual pining going on. Neither of them realizes what's happening. And then the third point of view is Alexei, who is Dmitri's ex-husband. He is now the ruler of Novosvitsevo. He has undergone a ritual to come back basically from the dead, and he is wrong. Because that's another one of my favorite tropes. It's like they come back from the dead, but like off.
Right.
So those are the three point of views. But when I originally wrote the book, it was Dmitri and Alexei and a peasant soldier named Zora. And she was like some angry assassin type character who like intruded on Dmitri's court's mutual depression and like kick them into gear to go like take back their country. She is gone now because she didn't actually do a lot in the story. She also was not a super interesting character. So my editor, Amanda Ferreira, a Penguin Random House Canada, who I treasure dearly, she when she first got the book from my agent, she wrote back. She was like, there's a lot of love about this book, but why is Zora here? And also, like, shouldn't the third point of view be Dimitri? Because it's a love story. And I was like, it's a love story? What? There was no romance in the first version of the
Really?
book. There
Wow.
wasn't. And so she just like saw right to the heart of things, and I immediately gutted the book. I got rid of Zora except for a single scene because she needed her little cameo. And I rewrote it with Vasily as the third point of view. And obviously now the very heart of the story is a story about love between two people, and how that can be both hurtful in the case of an abusive relationship, but also extraordinarily healing in the case of a good one. So yeah, like I said, like the first draft of this book, if it met the last draft,
Yeah.
they're completely different books.
And now that makes so much sense. I mean, it's so interesting, not only just like the added point of view that is no longer there and switched out with a different point of view, but just the absence of the love story in the first draft. And yeah, but how cool that your editor could sort of see, between the lines, and then be like, oh, well, what about? And then now here.
Yeah, and this was before I think like the big romantasy boom, because
Yeah.
this book actually was submitted, this revision was taking place in the fall of 2021. And so I was like, oh, if I'm writing adult fantasy, like I can't really have like the love story be the central plot. Like adult fantasy is much more plot heavy. It's much more full of political intrigue. Like I had all these thoughts about like what adult fantasy like should be if it was gonna sell. But then she absolutely corrected me, and the book turned into the book it was supposed to be. And I feel good now because I would say it's a romantasy. And hopefully readers of that like particular form of the genre will very much enjoy the heavy emphasis on like character development, relationships, and the ways in which like people change and can interact with each other and heal after trauma. So
Yeah. Well, that's so wonderful. And oh my gosh, well, that it just makes me so much more excited to read the book. And I can't wait for everybody else to be able to read it. And aside, like I said, when first talking about it, aside from the amazing description and how good it sounds, you have the gorgeous cover on the outside. And what was that cover process like? Did you get any say in what it looked like, or how did that go about?
this is super unusual for authors, but I had a ton of say in the cover, and I'm super grateful for that. We went through a ton of revisions and different, like just even completely different styles of cover, and my team worked super hard to kind of like understand the market and like what kind of covers attract people. We did a lot of market research, just thinking about like what covers are popular. What popped on social media? So like, what are the covers that get shared around on TikTok? Because that's a big part of book marketing these days. And so I had a lot of ideas about like symbolism and color schemes and like what I thought spoke to the book. And my extremely patient and extremely talented cover designer, Talia Abramson, suffered through getting all of my opinions that are informed by zero artistic sensibility. And she whipped up this incredible cover. And literally, we got like the final version like 12 hours before the production deadline for the ARCs.
My
And so
gosh.
my editor called me up. And she was like, okay, like, I'm super nervous because like, I need you to open this email that I'm going to send you. And like, this is kind of like the last, like, this is the last thing. And I opened the email and I like screamed. I screamed so loud that I scared my cats. I like started to cry. I sent my editor a super unprofessional, profanity-laden all caps email being like, this is the best cover ever. Like, are you sure this is actually my cover? It doesn't belong to another author. And so we really went down to the wire on like revisions and Talia pulled this incredible concept like out of thin air, and I was stunned. Everyone was stunned, and I am so appreciative because we've been getting a ton of love for the cover, and I think it is both beautiful just as a piece of artwork, but also very evocative of the book and the mood. And she worked in a lot of little symbols that, when you actually read the book, you could take another look at the cover and like understand why certain things are there. So I feel very, very lucky that I was allowed to be involved, and also that I ended up with something absolutely drop dead gorgeous.
Yeah, it is so stunning and it's very dramatic. And I love that aspect of these little details that you'll be able to know more about once you read the book or understand more, because that's always so fun. And yeah, like I noticed them obviously seeing the cover. Like there's the key here, the bullets or the bird cage. And but then to know once you read it, they'll be like, oh yeah, that makes a little more sense. And it's really just such a stunning cover and it stands out. And yeah, oh my gosh, it's and that's just so cool that you were able to have such so much of a say on what it looked like, or you know, viewing the different possibilities and throughout the process.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I always, during any interview, want to shout out my entire team at Random House Canada. They are absolutely incredible. I've had the pleasure of working with just really great, obviously my editor, Amanda, my cover designer, Talia, my PR and marketing team led by Anais, and the sales team led by Evan. It's an incredible, caring, really, really dedicated and hardworking team. I'm so lucky as an author to have them in my corner, especially because publishing a Jewish book isn't easy. Publishing a queer book isn't easy. Publishing a queer Jewish book is really not easy. And they have never once wavered or been like, hey, can we tone down some of this in the marketing, or ask me to like lighten up on talking about like the Jewish stuff especially. They are incredibly supportive, and I'm eternally grateful that they made the choice to, as a business, decide to support what I was doing, because it isn't easy and it is not the obvious book to decide to publish. And so I'm like just forever grateful that they gave me the opportunity to tell this story and that they're supporting it so immensely.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's so wonderful. Well, if you could turn The Sins on Their Bones into anything other than a TV show or a movie, what would that be?
That's easy. I would do a graphic novel.
That's awesome.
I've had some incredible art done, and some of it is in a very graphic novel style. And I looked it up and I was like,
Yeah.
huh,
Absolutely. Well,
So I'm
hey.
gonna manifest that.
Absolutely. That is everybody's
TV
homework
graphic
who's
novel.
listening. Yeah, homework for anyone who is listening. Manifest that every day until it happens. That would be so fun. And yeah, it's, yeah, such a, dramatic fantasy too, seen and brought to life with color and art. And it would just be so fun. And yeah, oh, that would be a lot of fun. Well,
Yeah,
I'm totally going to manifest
that's my
that.
immediate answer. Thank
Yeah,
you.
I love that. Well, what are you most excited for when The Sins on Their Bones releases?
I am excited for people to read the book and recognize themselves in it. The reason I wanted to write what I call like Jewish normative fantasy was because as a kid, I did not like have access to a lot of books that featured Jews that weren't about like the Holocaust. Like every book that I read that featured Jewish people, they were always victims of the Holocaust. And it definitely isn't great to only see yourself and your religion and your culture represented in books as like the victim, or just passive recipients of like terrible hate. And so I always was like, you know what? Like, if mice can have a monastery and clearly be Christian, if, Aslan in the Chronicles of Narnia could be Jesus, like, why can't everyone be a Jew? It makes equally as much sense, right? Because we're inventing
Yeah.
worlds. And so, like,
Right.
they could have whatever religion they want. And so,
Right.
I really wanted to make a world that wasn't based on the typical, Christian, like, redemption arc. That kind of story, not that there's anything wrong with it, but it's been written a bunch. And that kind of theme, those themes of forgiveness and resurrection and redemption, undergird a lot of fantasy that we read. And so I wanted to come at world building from a different point of view and just start from cultural and religious touchstones that made sense to me and that resonated with me. And so I'm most excited for readers to see themselves in the book's pages and hopefully feel like just a little bit at home.
Absolutely. What a wonderful answer. During this process of publishing and writing your book and putting it out into the world, was there something that you've learned that you didn't know before going into this journey?
Probably how many times do you have to read your own book over and over again if you're going to get it traditionally published? We went through, I think, 8 rounds of developmental editing with my editor once she bought the book. I had already done 2 rounds of developmental editing with my agent. And then there were 5 rounds of what they call past pages. So that's like a copy editor going through it. That's a proofreader going through it. That's us going through it, making sure that there are no errors. And honestly, like I love this book to death, and I'm so glad I do, because if I didn't absolutely 1000% love it at the beginning, I would be crying my eyes out right now. As it stands, I'm like, please, no more. I can't wait till this
Right.
TB again. It doesn't even make sense to me anymore as a story. Like, words bleed together on the page, and then every time someone reads it and is like, wow, I had an emotional reaction to this. It was so tense, or like, I was like on the edge of my seat, or like I felt this emotion. I'm like, you did? Because now I read it and it's like reading like the world's most boring grocery list because I've just read it like 50 times. So I think that's the thing that like I didn't know about publishing that really struck me. If you're going to try to publish something, make sure it's something you would read 50 times.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I can imagine how that could become like, oh wow, I think I'm good. Like, oh, I think that's enough. Yeah. No, it's that's wonderful advice and something that I do hear often where people say like, oh yeah, I think I'm done reading this book forever. Like, and, I think it's ready to put it
Yeah,
away.
maybe like 10 years from now, I'll go back and read it again and be like, oh, this is actually good. But for right now, I'm like, I am done.
Well, what would be your advice for any aspiring authors?
My advice, like my one piece of advice that I always give to aspiring authors is you have to finish the book first. So you can't edit a blank page. That was something that my agent said to me a long time ago, and I really took it to heart. I think where a lot of aspiring authors get tripped up is you want your book to be perfect. You want your first draft to be incredible. You want to get the story right. But that kind of perfectionism I find really hinders like actually getting your book done. So I always say, because I'm a freelance editor, so I help people with their stories. I always say like you have to actually just write it. It can be terrible. Like it can be wrong. This book that I wrote, when I first wrote it and I drafted it, it was absolutely incorrect. I had this whole other random girl who didn't do anything. And I deleted her point of view and the story didn't change one bit, which means that she was really 100% useless. But it got the story out onto the page. And the only way I was able to edit it and make it what it is today is because it was written. It was finished. And so that's my advice to aspiring authors is forget about imposter syndrome, forget about making it perfect. You could write the shittiest first draft ever, and most of us do, but it's okay because then the next step is you get to edit it. It's not like you're carving it in stone. You have to get that first draft out there so that you can then work to improve it. So just write, just finish the book.
Yeah, that is wonderful advice. Thank you so much for sharing that. What would be your advice to your younger self?
I think that my advice to my younger self would be don't give up writing and also don't think that there's some kind of expiration date on when you can tell your stories. I as a kid was super influenced by like Christopher Paolini and some of these other teenage authors who became huge successes. I was like, if I get to college and I haven't like become a bestseller, like I'm done. I'm old and shriveled. I have no more stories left to tell. That's not true. Like Laura, author age 8, you had a good start with The Rat and the Mouse. It's kind of disturbing. It could certainly use some world building. And your prose is not like fantastic, but you can get better. You always have stories in you, and most of it is literally just not giving up. It's being hard-headed and taking rejection and just persisting, because if you're a person who is born to tell stories, that's what you're always going to want to do. So you just have to kind of bulldoze through the barriers that stand in your way and just keep going, keep writing, keep finishing stories, keep trying to get them out there. And one day it will all work out.
I absolutely love that answer. That was such a wonderful answer. And I loved hearing that. And I want to thank the amazing, inspiring, fabulous fantasy queen, Laura R. Samotin, for joining me today. I had the most amazing time learning more about you and your book. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Buy my book, but really, everyone go buy. So let them
Right.
burn and
That's the
sit on those tides.
takeaway.
Yeah, really, you should go buy those two books. And then if you do have room in your budget, buy a third book, which is Skin in My Bones, coming out on May 7th. But yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was a ton of fun.
Of course. I had so much fun as well. And yes, everyone definitely obviously needs to go read Prince of Endless Tides and So Let Them Burn, but of course as well, Sins on Their Bones. And where can the listeners find you?
So these days I am mostly on Instagram, but I'm on every platform at Laura R. Samitin. And you can just kind of find me showing off my amazing art, promoting my book. I'm not on Twitter so much these days, but sometimes I do short text-based thoughts there when I'm not messing up videos and like dropping my book on my foot or like slamming it into the edge of my bookcase, trying to make reels. But I also do have query101.blog, which is my blog that I put together for authors who have written books and are interested in querying to get an agent and hopefully eventually a book deal. So you can check that out. It's totally free. And you can also visit my website, laurarsamitin.com, where I have kind of all my information about the book and where you can pre-order it. And please pre-order it because that really means a lot for debut authors. It shows the publisher that there's interest, and the more pre-orders you get, the more interest, obviously there is. So it is really, really helpful if you can do that. But if you can't, also request it through your library or through Libby. That's also an amazing way to support authors because library interest is also a huge part of getting publishers interested in your book too. So anything you can
Absolutely.
do helps.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, everybody go find Laura on social media and on her website. And yes, pre-order the book or request it at your library. And do you have anything? I know you just talked about Query 101 and of course the book, but do you have anything else upcoming or current that you want to shout out or promote?
Nothing I can talk about yet. The worst part of publishing is that my hair is always full of secrets. It's like, is it too? It's like too late in the millennium probably to make that Mean Girls reference anymore. But like,
No.
publishing is like so full of secrets at all times, and unfortunately, like there's a lot of cool stuff going on with TSTB, but I can't talk about it just yet.
Yeah.
So I'll have to come back in, a few months
Absolutely. Yeah.
and spill all the beans.
Of course. Yeah. Everybody keep your eyes and ears open. And I'll be waiting for The Rat and the Mouse, 2025, publishing 2025
Yeah,
for sure.
it's going to be cheap to produce. It's only, and I'm checking here, 20 double-spaced small pages. So
Amazing.
it's like a
Easy.
folio. It's not even a
Right.
novella.
Easy budget for, yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you everyone for listening to today's episode of Try Reading. And don't forget to subscribe or follow the podcast. And if you'd like, you can write a review or rate the show. You can follow Try Reading on Instagram and Threads at Try Reading Podcast. You can find this show wherever you get your podcasts, and you can listen to new episodes every other Friday. As always, you can buy books by the Try Reading authors through the bookshop.org link in the Try Reading link tree below. And you already know that includes Laura's fabulous debut. I pre-ordered it, and so should you, or request it at your library and tell everyone you know about it. Tell everyone about the Sins on Their Bones. And Laura, I want to thank you again for taking the time to be on this episode of Try Reading, and I just had the best time talking with you, and it was such an honor to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much. This was a ton of fun.